This episode is brought to you by America's Rehab Campus. Get on the road to recovery with the best rehab in beautiful Arizona. Dial 1-833-272-7342. That's 1-833-ARC-REHAB.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now tuned in to the Archer.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the R-Cast. My name is Buddha. I got a co-host with me today. He's my homeboy. You might have heard him in a couple episodes back, my brother Ryan. What's up, Ryan? How you doing, dog?
What's up, everybody? How y'all doing?
Yeah, man, we hanging out today, man. We had such a good conversation last time you were here. You had an incredible story. We got to dive deep, man, and one of the biggest blessings about being able to do this is the connections, being able to create new connections and meet new people and bring some new people in here that have some incredible stories. This is so awesome, man. The guest that we have here today, I have been trying to get this guy on the show for almost a year. He has come highly recommended from, you know, ex-clients to employees here. You know, him and his wife planted Covenant Generations Church. They've been active in the community for almost 21 years. It'll be 21 years this January. Everyone, please get up out your seats and give a huge round of applause to our good friend, Pastor Scotty Grulet. What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good, Buddha. Thanks for inviting me. I'm excited.
Man, I am excited too. This is one of those podcasts. I came into the studio extra early today, cleaned the entire studio, dusted everything. My whole thing is like when we're going to start grinding and doing, especially with incredible stories like this, the studio has to be perfect. Everything has to be dusted. That way, you know, they say cleanliness is close to godliness. So yep. It's like, all right, man, we got to get this whole studio set up. So it is an absolute pleasure to have you and Brother Ryan in here with us too, man.
Absolutely. I'm excited Ryan's here too. That's my buddy.
Yeah, we got the orange hair looking like a pumpkin, ready for Halloween. So how are you doing? How have you been? How's everything going?
I'm doing good.
Yeah?
Things are good. I get to ride my Harley, my motorcycle, and hang out with some of the best guys, not just in our church, but around the city that ride. And I get to help people and get to see people go into rehab and get their lives changed. And then to walk in here to what you are a part of, what Ryan went through at this place. And I'm excited to even be here on the property, walking through when you're giving me a tour, because that's our heart, because I was addicted. That's part of my story. And whatever you want to talk about, I'm ready to go. But life is good. 9 grandbabies.
Oh, man, congratulations.
3 full-grown kids. And I'll be married 40 years this October 15th.
That's fantastic. Hallelujah. Congratulations.
That's an accomplishment in my generation.
Yeah, that's an accomplishment for the generations now.
Any generation. Come
on, yeah, for reals, dude. Well, it's awesome. And one of the coolest things for me is being able to see people that are in faith and just to see that spirit shine bright through them. So, you know, they say we're 2 or more gather. We said a prayer before we started this. I'm hoping that we reach people.
Yeah.
I was so interested when I initially started talking to Brother Kyle, was because he told me a little bit about your past with the addictions and stuff like that. So I want to get into your church. I want to talk about where it's located, things like that. But before we do that, I want to start from the beginning.
Okay.
You know, I want to kind of go back into the history. Where are you from, Pastor Scotty?
I am originally, well, I was born in L.A.
Los Angeles,
like the story I was talking to you about, and that's the story.
Okay.
But quickly, my mom hitchhiked all the way back to Annapolis, Maryland. So I was raised in Annapolis, Maryland, and Baltimore. And I mean inner city of Baltimore. So had to fight all the time in the inner city. And my nanny who raised me for my mom was an strong African-American woman. And actually, one of the marriages that my mom had with a guy, one of the best dads or stepfathers who stepped up, was a great man named Jimmy, who was an African-American man. So a lot of influence being in the inner city of Baltimore, Maryland, with gangs and fighting and situations. And then we moved to Roswell, New Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Where the aliens landed.
Okay.
Well, supposedly.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you have any siblings growing up? Were you a single only child? Did you have siblings?
Oh, I had siblings, yes.
Yeah, how many?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5. And then, of course, other half-siblings, too.
Oh, okay. All right.
My dad, there's 4 others from his other marriage that are half brothers and sisters.
Okay, so I heard you say that this was your stepdad. Your initial biological dad, was he ever around? Was he ever in the picture?
No.
No?
A little bit.
Okay.
But actually, my wife met his brother in prison, and he's red-complected like me. I look just like my Uncle Jack and my dad. He died in prison, doing drugs in prison. And my real father died. Ryan knows the story, doing drugs, face down in it with prostitutes. He left his whole family. And that's where I was going, man. That's
really
that's where I was headed because of the generational curses, the things that I was raised around, the stuff that I witnessed with my mom, how she was treated by men. And
So, you know, going back to when you said that you were kind of raised by a nanny and things like that, did your mom, I'm guessing she was always working. Was she doing?
Yes, at the post office. Yeah.
She was working at the post office.
Yeah. Retired 30 some odd years. Yeah.
Okay. And I know you mentioned the one stepfather, but was there a continuous like amount of positive male influences and positive people in your life?
Back? No.
No?
No. There was one gentleman that she was married to that my siblings, that he was their dad. Uh-huh. My sisters and my little brother, Johnny. And then there were other siblings after that are half. And he was a decent man, but also he's from Tucumcari and New Mexico. And I ended up back in Roswell, New Mexico. But when my mom was married to him, it was hard. It was a hard life. He didn't treat her the greatest all the time. And there were many times, because I'm the oldest, where I would hide my siblings in the closet or things would happen. And that just, there were abusive situations with all of them. And yeah, it was hard.
And how many times was your mom married?
5 marriages and a couple guys that she lived with.
Okay. And this is just, you know, makes me curious because from what I've seen, you know, especially when we've had people that are military, you know, moving from different places to have to uproot, right? I always think of like the analogies of like plants. If you continue to uproot a plant, it's not going to grow. Yeah, at its full potential, right? It has to stay potted. So like being uprooted, moving, you know, from Los Angeles to Baltimore, right? And then down to Roswell and having people in and out of your household. Was there a lot of instability? Do you feel like that is one of the things that started, I guess, helping you go towards the more dark side of life?
Yeah, and we did a pit stop in Tampa Bay, Florida, too.
Wow.
And that was my middle school years. And those were rough years, too, at a school that was rough for Tampa, Florida. But it was a quick stay in Tampa, Florida. Then we ended up in Roswell. But yeah, the instability was really crazy in examples of men in my life, for sure.
And as far as education goes in school, how were you in school? Were you a good student?
Okay. I was a jock.
Yeah.
And wrestled and played football. And
there you go.
Yeah. Popular player. You know, met my wife on my motorcycle, cruising Main Street.
That's cool.
Where the aliens landed, you know? I did okay. Like, I passed. Like, I got through. I graduated. I didn't flunk out. Wanted to quit a lot, but I really liked partying, doing all the fun stuff with all the jocks, and then sleeping with the cheerleaders at both high schools.
Yeah.
My wife was a crosstown rival, Goddard Rocket, and I was a Roswell Coyote, and we were always, you know, dating the cheerleaders at both places, and so pretty crazy.
That's cool, man. We had a really cool connection when Ryan was here in the studio because, you know, I've known this dude for a long time, and he ended up, my wife's brother was his, like, him and my wife's brother used to go at it all the time as far as wrestling and stuff went. So that was really cool.
My rival. No, his wife's brother was my rival in high school. Ooh, I'm talking about everything.
Yep. It was really, so it's like, it's just interesting to me to see, everyone says it's such a small world. I don't necessarily agree with that analogy just because if I go to China, guarantee I'm not seeing anybody that I know, right? Everyone just kind of stays here, but it's so cool to see how the different connections come together, like with the sports and everything you were telling me about your son. And we're going to go into that later too. I want people to hear that story. That was pretty incredible right there. But all right. So, you were a jock. You did pretty good in school. At what point in your life do you remember the moments of your life, your age, where you were at, where you feel like you started kind of dabbling in substances or, you know? Yeah.
About 13, I lost my virginity very young, molested, and some really bad situations. And not just by crazy, my family had a crazy chick babysitter. And I was a young teenager, like 12, 12 and a half. And when your dad brings a stack of old porno magazines and plops them in your room at the foot of your bed and says, here's how you learn, well, you're going to learn. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't all on digital stuff and access on your phone free and be controlled by a 2-inch screen as a man. It was magazines, you know, and that's how I learned. But all of that right around the same time, and then a couple military-looking young men who liked to dress up as military. When we were in Baltimore, we lived up on this high hill, and we sledded down it, you know, in the wintertime. And across this field, there were these two beautiful homes, and my mom and dad her husband had a pretty decent house, and he was a stepfather, and all the kids wanted to play at those guys' places, Ryan, like Buddha. It was like they had ropes courses, and they were like cool older young men, like upper high school college agers, and ended up out there playing, goofing around neighbors with these guys, and two of us ended up tied to trees by ropes and exposed, and my life was, you know, really affected and ruined by that kind of stuff. Like I dealt with, am I going to be straight? Does my door swing both ways? You know, as a young junior higher and high schooler, does it matter? Is this same sex attraction that I'm having? And then at the same time, trying to medicate the pain of stuff, I started dabbling, like you just asked about, into drugs, speed, acid, cocaine, and a lot of drinking, a lot of cocaine too. But to medicate this pain of being molested, having crazy fathers, stepdads, having a crazy babysitter, literally. And I was a young man, and I wasn't born again then, and I really didn't mind because I liked it when the babysitter was coming over.
Yeah.
It was sickness, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And on and on and on in my life, all through my teenage years. And the more I slept around, the more sex I had during high school, the more jockisms, being a jock in the parties and being invited, I got to be known as a partier and drinking. And I had facial hair. I rode a motorcycle, and I looked older. You know, I looked, you know, 21 when I was 14 and 15, and I'd go buy alcohol for other kids. And so always medicating the pain, and I started diving into it deep, into the drugs, and my life was wrecked and ended up having to look into and go into a rehab, and it was crazy. My mom and dad got divorced. And
this was the dad that you were the closest with?
I would say my sister's father was a good dude. They didn't see everything because I would take up for them. I would get beatings and spankings for them. My last memory of him before she divorced him was they were avid bowlers. Like, bro, Buddha, I can go bowl with you and Kyle and Ryan and throw a 210 to a 270 without thinking about it, because they were always bowling. I was always in the bowling alley. But as I was getting older, I was finding things in the bowling alley, like the drugs, alcohol being served outside, and the girls and women, but older women too. But it was just messed up. But one night they came home, and it was evident that her husband was on drugs. It was evident something happened. And there were many times there were arguments in their room when they were having intimacy. Mm-hmm. And there was a bathroom, then me, and then the siblings were down the way. My sisters and my little brother was just too small, and they were small. And one night I heard this screaming and this thumping. Remember, this is the guy that introduced me to porn. And then it turned out to be videos, VHS videos. And he was always feeding me that. And I was already struggling because of all kinds of stuff. Well, one night, my mom was screaming, and I opened my door, and she went running down the hallway. And I didn't see it because it was on the other side of her head. But when she got into the living room, he came running after her screaming, and they had been in the room and they were scantily dressed. And when I got to the living room, I could see that my mom would wear pigtails and ponytails, that he pulled her hair out on one side of her head, and she was bleeding. And then he grabbed a bowling trophy and he started hitting her with the bowling trophy that they won that night, because they were very good amateur, could become pro bowlers. And she's crying and screaming. And then he's hitting her with this bowling trophy, and he picks her up, Buddha, and he picks her up by her private area and her neck and runs across the room and releases her. And she hits the wall by the front door and she slumps down and there's blood and she's out. Oh, man. Cold. I thought she was dead. Well, I'm playing football. I'm bigger. I'm a man. I'm not 12 anymore. And I thought my mom was dead. I ran out to the front yard. I call my father to task, her husband. He stumbles out. I hid my siblings in their room in the closet. I said, don't come out no matter what you hear. And he comes out, had my class ring on. I'm bigger. I'm a wrestler. I'm a football player. I'm a jock. I'm not high. I haven't drank anything that night. And he comes, stumbles out. I'm going to kill you. We're going to fight. You think you're somebody because you're in sports and you're all that. And I rip my father, her husband. But I considered him a good man, you know. And I beat him in front of our big tree in the front yard. He had cuts from my ring. The neighbors called the police. Long story short, it didn't look like he did it. It looked like I did it all. It looked like I did that to my mom. It looked like I did that to her husband. My siblings didn't even see to be able to tell them. So I ended up, you know, in a situation having to deal with juvenile stuff with a judge who believed in me. And, you know, back in that day was telling me, you know, you need to go in the Marine Corps. You need to fix this. Like, you have a choice here, and you're going to make a choice. And so I did. But long story short, my mom, when she comes to, she tells all the powers that be in the authorities, it wasn't my son, it was my husband. Mm. So I get out and over it and through it, and they end up getting divorced. That's my last memory of literally saving possibly my siblings' lives and my mom's. And I thought she was dead, slumped over up against the wall.
Wow. That is a lot. And had you known before that your stepdad at the time was using? Were you aware of it at all? Or were you just
drinking? Drinking? You know, cussing, carousing, not much around the little kids, you know, my siblings. My sister was old enough, you know, she was young. But he said someone laced something in it at the bowling alley that night. That was his thing. And maybe, you know, I don't ever talk like bad about him or to put him down. He's been married multiple times as well, 4 or 5 times. He's been married to his last lady for a long time. My mom was married a bunch of times and always in and out of marriages and relationships. And he lives in New Mexico still. And I've stopped through going to Sturgis to see him.
Did you?
And with my wife and hang out multiple times. And even though he's not my real father, you know, there's some sort of a relationship. And I don't, you know, we're supposed to forgive, you know. Absolutely. And I did, and it's part of my healing. But it was crazy, Buddha. Like, my life as a young man and as a child was crazy, except for being raised by my grandfather.
It's so interesting to me, as a father and as a husband, to even think, you know, and it goes back to the generational curses that we carry from generations on, right? My dad and I were just talking. There's a lot of womanizing, a lot of that ugly sexual stuff in my dad's family, right? But just a clear little example, something to give to kind of tie it together so you know, is my grandfather was a product of rape. So, you know, it comes with that, and it goes through the generations and things. And it makes you wonder, as a stepdad, you know, what must have been going through his head or what he must have experienced too growing up to think that it was acceptable to give a young man pornography,
right?
And to like that is an okay thing. That's just the natural way of growing up. That's, and in comparison to certain people, that's nothing. You know, in comparison to certain people, some people have it way worse. It's just interesting to me to see the dynamics of the household of how certain people raise people and do certain things.
Well, like what you said about your dad and grandfather, and y'all are talking about it. Before my grandpa, who raised me for the first 5 or 6 years and always going to his ranch in Virginia, I was the post hole digger with all the brothers and all the Latino guys. You know, in my teenage years, I got to go see my grandpa, and through all the hell I was going through, I always got to help my grandfather on this ranch with cows and chickens and the place and the pond and the fishing.
Yeah.
He taught me how to fish. It wasn't my dad or the dads. But like you're talking about the generational curses. One time I was out there, and I'm in ministry now, Buddha, and my grandpa goes, he's drinking a big tall boy and smoking a cigar, and he says, Scotty, you're just Jimmy Swaggart. And, you know, if people may not know who he is, but he's a big preacher that fell, prostitutes, drinking. He confessed everything publicly, lost his whole ministry. But he was an influence to many on his teaching on the tabernacle.
Yeah.
And I loved the guy, and he had already fallen. My grandpa goes, the reason why I don't go to church is because you're just like Jimmy Swaggart. I believe you're just like him. I said, do you really believe that, Grandpa? Like, do you really believe that of the best man I ever had in my life, who retired as a Navy chief, highest enlisted possible, then went to work for NASA for another 25 years, he was working for them. Do you really believe that of me? I went through hell, and I was talking to him about all the hell I was going through. And then the next time I came, he had been diagnosed with cancer, Buddha.
Wow.
Then the next time I came, he was about to go on his deathbed. You know what he said to me this time? Not drinking a tall boy, not smoking his pipe or cigar, with tears in his eyes. My grandfather, my mom's, she's in heaven too. Her whole side, her brother, her sister, my Auntie Ann, they're all dead. All of them. My Aunt Dodie, all of them. My Uncle Billy, my Auntie Ann, they're all dead. I did my grandfather's funeral, and it was Navy, flyover, full gun salute. The flag given to my grandmother, Jane, it was awesome. But before he died, he looked at me. He said, Scotty, when I was younger, he said, I was sorry I called you Jimmy Swaggart. He said, when I was younger, generational curses, Buddha. He goes, when I was younger, I used to go to a church. And what I went through with that minister violated my life. And I turned my back on God, not just religion, but on God. Because of what happened to me when I was younger. Boom. There it is.
Yep.
I don't know grandpappy's grandpappy's grandpappy. There's no one alive for me to ask about the forefathers. But I realize, wow, this is generational.
Yeah.
But yet my grandfather was married to his wife for 60-some-odd years.
Mm.
And then my mom, her sister, they're all married, divorced, married, divorced, married, divorced. And Jamie and I knew we're going to block that generational curse. We're not even going to use the D word.
Mm-mm.
Divorce.
Yeah.
We won't even use this in the house. We started that kind of stuff. But to find out from my grandfather, whoa, wow, that's why I went through that with those crazy older youth being tied to the tree. And that's why I went by and they violated me and my friend. And that's why I went through that with that crazy babysitter. And that's why I went through, I leaned to sexual promiscuity and sexual immorality. I didn't know it was immorality back then. I just knew it was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I never, ever, 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 ever wanted to have kids. Cause I was thinking about myself. Like how do I act? How am I thinking right now? What? I don't care if it's a guy or a girl. Ended up in orgies, Buddha. Ended up being invited because, you know, on cocaine, you can perform. It's a sexual drug. Everyone knows that. I got invited to Tupperware parties.
They're not selling Tupperware.
Wow. Ain't no Tupperware there.
Different type of plastic.
Yeah. And
thinner plastic.
But my life was wrecked. But it was at that moment that I realized, wow, that's why I went through all of that, and I got to do something about these drugs. I got to do something. I got to get free.
Man.
You know, I'm just medicating the pain at that moment.
Absolutely. Are you familiar with, I'm sure you are, the rapper Seven? Okay.
Good friend of Scotty's.
Okay.
We're friends.
So Seven is somebody that I've always looked up to.
Dude, we're going
to
be having him coming up this year.
Are you really?
Yeah.
So We're going to talk.
Three times.
Well, we're going to talk because we'll talk after this. This ain't my podcast, but we're going to talk. But one of the things that he talked about on some of the music that he made was talking about that he had experienced molestation from somebody in the mm-hmm. church when he was younger.
Surrender.
Mm-hmm. And he had turned his back on God completely, right? Yep. And you know, for anyone listening, man, like, we're not here to judge. I'm not here to throw nope. anything in anyone. Absolutely not. We're just talking. We're having a conversation. But it's like, in the song, he talks about when he finally found God that he felt disgusted with himself that he ever felt those feelings before.
Yep.
You know, and as somebody who's a Christian, I try and be better all the time. We could always be better. I can see how even with some of the most holiest things in the world in faith and believing in God, or whether you're in, my wife is Catholic, you know, so we make it work. I'm Christian. She's Catholic. But like even in the Catholic Church, there's been a lot of ugly and evil. It's so hard for mm-hmm. people to be able to differentiate the difference between what a real relationship with God is and what that means versus a man, a person, a human of the flesh mm-hmm. doing these horrible things. And it's just, it's crazy to see all the religious trauma, all of these things. And people, yep. like we talked about earlier, people are just more lost nowadays in comparison, yep. you know. But I think it's also an amazing thing that you were able, or God was able to give you that clear thought process to be able to see these generational curses and kind of get that better understanding of where they came from in your life.
I didn't even know what the term meant. I just knew this is affecting me, and it must be, I said literally, it must be generational, Grandpa. This is generational. I didn't know about curses in the Bible, generational curses, that the sins of our dad's dad can visit. This is scripture.
That's crazy.
That the sins of our fathers, it's called iniquities. It's the other word for sin. Sin is sin. We all sin.
Yeah.
All show the glory of God. But iniquities is the hidden sins, iniquities of your father's father that tries to visit on Buddha and Scotty and Ryan or anyone listening that tries to visit on the second and third and even to the fourth generation.
Mm.
So some people don't even know why they do what they do, why they're going through what they're going through. Some do know that their parents were addicts or they were raised around it, you know, and then became addicts. But some don't know
yeah.
that even addiction is generational, that abuse is generational, that verbal, mental, physical, and sexual trauma and abuse is generational. Lying is generational. Divorce can be a generational curse. I didn't know the term generational curse, but at that moment, before my grandpa died, I knew.
Wow.
And we prayed together, and he wanted to receive Jesus into his heart. And he's on his deathbed, bro, admitting, I'm sorry I called you this because you're not that kind of minister, and I don't want to go and you think that for the rest of your life. This is what I went through, Scotty. And I was standing there with tears, Buddha, realizing, oh, I can be set free, and I can break pull down the strongholds and break the bondages, the generational curses, so it doesn't visit my kids.
That's amazing.
I was just going to ask you if he was a believer.
My grandpa.
He accepted Christ on his deathbed.
Again, like he made that
vow.
Apparently he was going to church when he was younger, and then he got wounded and hurt by a pastor treating him the same way.
How long do you think that separation from God was for him?
Oh, years.
His whole life, man.
Your whole life, probably. I mean, most knowing him.
Decades and decades.
How God uses man to, you know, like that, his grandpa's soul. Yep. We were just talking about this yesterday. Like, his soul was saved.
Before he died.
He has eternal life now. And God used you to bring that light to him. Like, wait. And it's awesome that he did that. Because you could have held that resentment for a long, still to this day, you could have.
I could have went and
my grandpa
ended up in cocaine face down.
Or ended up with Jimmy Swaggart. You could have, you know, because that was a man that you looked up to saying that to you. So that could have broken mm-hmm. you. And I was thinking about when you said moving earlier, Buddha made a really good comment. Almost all people I know that have gone through this walk of addiction and recovery didn't have stability, true stability in their lives. You, it was moving around. I moved around. I didn't, you know, I had a constant step there, but I moved around a lot. And that's just, you said it. What do we say? Masking the pain. Good.
Yeah.
Not having that stable person, and it doesn't have to be a male role model, which helps as a man, but just a stable
And it's true.
Positive person.
Dude, I always think about that, man. Like, I got into gardening a lot, like, as I got older. And I started learning that every time you take a plant out and repot it, you stimulate the roots, you are stunning the growth of that plant. Because it's supposed to be established in nourishing soil, right? So it's like, I mean, God shows us his way in different things through life. And gardening, nature is one of those biggest things. If we're continuing to uproot ourselves where we don't have a foundation, we tend to stunt our own growth, man. And I truly believe that.
Pastor always says that. Good soil.
That's when God started breaking the generational curses in my life.
And how old were you at this time, Pastor?
Oh, man, I'd have to. Young married.
Yeah.
And I came home and told Jamie what he said. And I said, we have to figure this out, what the Bible says about, just for us, not because of religion, a relationship with God. We got to figure this out.
So you were in your early 20s then?
Probably like 19 and a half or 20 years old.
That's what I was.
And you are already doing, you're already a pastor at 19, 20 years old?
Yeah.
Okay.
Youth ministry, yeah.
Okay.
Helping kids not to do what I was doing.
And was that still, so I'm trying to get the timeline right to when you said that you were, you know, in your promiscuity and you know, all of these things, were these all kind of going on at the same time? Were you kind of having this internal battle between good and evil inside of yourself?
12 to 17 and a few months old.
Man.
But then everything you have to battle after you start going to church, get saved. My wife introduced me to Jesus. Her dad, Buddha went to hear this preacher. I rode my motorcycle. And I went to a big Baptist church where Jamie and her dad, Jim, I call it the three J's, Jamie, Jim, and Jesus. And that night, this big guy, Ryan knows the story, is playing. I don't know if you guys are listening, ever seen someone play the saw, but even online, violinists with the cello bow can bend a saw, like a big hand saw, between their legs. And he was playing songs like Amazing Grace, How Sweet the Sound, and it got my attention. Mm-hmm. Like, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
But the preacher was, Tommy Stone was 6'7". He looked giant to me. Big cowboy, oil rigger, oil guy in Texas, and he starts preaching about hell and going there. And I'm only saying that not because of the crowd listening. I'm just sharing my story.
Yeah.
And he's preaching so good. It's got my attention because he played the saw. But then he's pointing and he's talking about this place where worms will never die. And I'm thinking, there's worms in hell? How's that? It's hot. And then he would say, there's flames in hell, but yet you don't burn up. And I'm like, well, how's that happening? I'm confused, you know?
Yeah.
And he's preaching about weeping, wailing, and gnashing of teeth. And I'm like, okay, I can see why people are crying, but how are they gnashing their teeth? Like, you have teeth in hell? Like, I had all these questions about hell. And then you say it's a place where you're cast into outer darkness. So I'm like, well, how's there outer darkness, but
flames.
Yet there's fire? I'm totally confused as a young man.
Yeah.
But he gives the altar call, and he goes over and he plays the piano, and he sings, I wouldn't go forward. People are coming forward to ask Jesus into their heart to forgive them of their sins, and I got a lot to ask forgiveness for and to forgive a lot of people for what they did to me. And I'm bawling, like I'm booger crying, Buddha. You know those moments when you're a hot mess. Your booger crying is different than just
sniffle. No, I got you.
And so Jamie comes over and says, I'll go up with you. And I'm like, no, get away. And I'm trying to date the girl. I told her to get away from me, you know? And then her mom and dad come over. And they say they'll go up with, we'll respond with you. And I'm like, no, just leave me alone. The youth pastor there doesn't know me from Adam. Jamie's youth pastor comes up and says, I'll walk forward with you. You don't have to go up alone. I said, get away from me. So I left that service. I rejected Jesus. Bawling, booger crying. All the way home on my motorcycle. That night, I had, remember waterbeds?
Yeah, oh, yeah. We were talking about those recently.
I missed my waterbed, but I was on a waterbed, and I woke up standing on my waterbed, Buddha, jumping up and down, screaming as loud as I could. My mom came in, flipped the light switch on. Ryan knows this story. I've told the church. And she yanks me down. I'm sweaty. I thought I popped my waterbed. I didn't know it was sweat. I'm drenched from head to toe. And my mom grabs my hand, cussing, yanks me down off my waterbed. And I'm like, Mom, we have to call Jamie. We have to call the Ashebrenner family. It's 12:30 at night. And she's all, what? I said, I dreamt about hell. There are worms. They don't die. There's fire, but you can't see yourself. There's weeping. You gnash your teeth. There's demons everywhere. She thought I was on drugs right at that moment. She slapped my face twice. And she's like, you're never going back to that cult ever again. It was my first time there. She goes, you're never going back to that cult. I said, right, Mom. A Baptist church is a cult? It's not a cult. They don't worship Satan. I ran past my mom, ran into the kitchen, grabbed the phone Buddha, and I called Jamie.
Rotary phone. Oh, yeah, no. That's awesome.
At midnight?
There's a lot of nines in her phone number.
And then they picked up. Her dad did. I'm bawling. I need to be saved. My mom just slapped me. I dreamt about hell like that guy preached about. Her parents came to my house, took me to the pastor's house in Roswell, New Mexico at 2:30 in the morning. I'm on my knees on a plastic couch, leaning on a plastic couch. I've never seen plastic runners. I've never seen chandeliers with plastic on them. I've never seen pillows with plastic at all. Not even in my nannies and in the African-American culture. I've never seen plastic on everything. But I got down with boogers and tears on all that plastic, and that man showed me how I could change my life. He didn't know that I was thinking about generational curses, and he showed me how to break them. Yeah. Jamie and I aren't married yet. We're not even full on dating yet. And at that moment, at 2:30 in the morning, I asked God into my heart for the very first time, not religion, but a real relationship. And my life was radically changed.
You know, for anybody listening, Pastor, I don't know if this is something that you could speak on, but what would you, how could you define a relationship with God versus, you know, maybe a misconception that somebody has about faith for those people that we're talking about that do have that religious trauma? Like, I mean,
church hurt.
Yeah.
I think God, I know God has an intense quest for all of his sons and daughters, lost or found, like they met him at a youth camp. They said a prayer. They went to a church and they heard the preacher say, if you say these words, everything's going to get better in your life. And then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
It seems like what you're going through, the attack is more. Because now the devil wants to attack you with more. Look at you. You're never going to get better. That's you. That's your thought patterns. That's the way you think. Scotty, that's the way you think, Ryan. That's the way you are, Buddha. And so the attack is increased. So for people that you're asking that are just, how do you talk about this personal relationship when I'm not talking about a church?
Mm-mm.
I'm not talking about attending. We're people are ecclesia. The Greek, Aramaic, and Hebrew word is people. It's not mortar, building, bricks, walls, roof, worship services in a building. It's you. Like, God made you. God created you and I. God created Ryan. God created Scotty. And we go through sometimes hell on this planet. We go through stuff, crazy hurts, pain, betrayals, stabbed in the back, abuses, verbal, physical, sexual, mental abuse, PTSD issues that people have, military. People see all kinds of stuff. Cops raised in the inner city like me. Racism, politicians gone wild, everything that we see, and we're wondering, is there any hope out there? Is there hope that my life can be changed? That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that Jesus, the one that we know, everyone knows the story. He came and he gave his life for us. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about going to church or leading at a church or even being a pastor like me. I'm talking about meeting him and taking it all to the cross. And Jesus said, cast your cares on me, for I care for you. He says, I died for that. Well, really? How come you even let me go through that? People have all those questions. You know, why did my auntie and my nana and my tata die? I'm mad at God. God gets the blame for everything. but yet he sent his only begotten son to fix everything, to fix the brokenness, to bring hope. I walk through with you in this building and I see people getting hope.
Yeah.
And this is huge. Like this, I didn't even know how big this was. And you and your podcast and how God's using you, that's the God I'm talking about, not religion.
Not
the letter of the law kills, but the spirit brings life.
All right. So, you know, before your wife introduced you to, you know, a relationship, having any type of faith, anything like that, did you have any type of a belief? Did you believe in a higher power up until that point?
Not in my family. So my mom's husband that did things, he was raised in Tucumcari, and I think his mom and dad, oh, I know, his mom and dad, because they would take us there, because the Gurley family is Latino and French.
Okay.
Now, he's not my real father, but I'm French. You know that, Gurley. So they were Jehovah's Witnesses.
Who was Jehovah's Witness?
My stepdad's parents
okay.
in Tucumcari. Prior to that, Catholic. But that gentleman didn't make me go to Catholic church or take my mom, Nancy, to Catholic church. We didn't go to church. So I did end up going to a Church of God before I met Jamie. And it's interesting because I don't always tell this part of the story.
I've never heard this
that,
part.
That girl that invited me to that member, I only wanted one thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that girl's name was Jamie also. And she was the girlfriend before that story I told you about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
With all the knocks that came out. We don't have to talk about that here, but the children that I was being tested for to be their parents. But she was a girl that took me to the Church of God, trying to win me over. And it was wild Pentecostal. It was crazy holiness Church of God. I was waiting for the snake dancers to come out type of Church of God.
Yeah.
They never dance with snakes. But, you know, I started to hear then. But I was addicted, dealing with drugs, and I was a good drummer. I'm a drummer too, so I can play. I'm like the backup to the backup to the backup in our church.
I don't
like to sweat before I'm going to get up and preach and sweat. I'm already sweaty, drenched. But you know, I played drums a few times for them when they needed a fill-in drummer, and then I stopped going. The drugs and stuff was just too much. The partying was too much. I didn't want to. They would use me now and then to play drums, and then. We broke up because I couldn't get from her what I wanted. And then fast forward to Jamie, the first time I tried to kiss her, Buddha, she slapped me. So I'm trying to get what I'm normally able to get. I got braces. She's got braces. I'm just trying to hook up.
And now you got blisters in your mouth.
Now I got blisters, blood. No, but I mean, she busted me for trying to kiss her because she just was living that way. She was going to save herself till marriage. You know, she was going to save herself for the right person. And it got me. It got to me. And I started going to that church. Then that big Baptist tall guy preached about fire and worms and hell.
Wow.
Real quick, I want to shout out Pastor Jamie. She's an awesome, awesome woman of God. So we got to give her a big shout out. She is she's an awesome woman. And through her testimony, through God using her, she won him.
Yeah.
You know, that's cool. That God uses, one thing he's taught me, God uses people. He used her, because ultimately, like he said, he only wanted one thing. We're men. He's keeping it real. God used her
to
bring
him.
That's
all I wanted from her.
And he's keeping it honest, but God had a different plan.
Yeah,
No, you're not just going to come kiss her. No. She's going to hold up her boundaries, and now look at 40 years.
This is how real it is, Buddha. Check this out. Jamie didn't drink, so I'm going to all the parties. So we had a big senior and junior class party.
This is a funny one right here.
Our church loses it when I tell this. We want guests to know my story and testimony. So every time I tell it, so the first time my wife ever got drunk in her life, I took her to the party, did not know that she was going to get drunk. She hates me telling this story, huh?
But, sorry, we're not recording.
No, but I want everyone to hear because that's how tight the storyline is.
Yeah.
12 and losing my virginity all the way.
Yeah.
My friend, Brian, who lives in Albuquerque, because we're all from New Mexico, and he asked her, do you want something to drink? And she said, yeah, Coke. Well, he goes to where they're serving, and it's got a little bit of rum in it. He had them put a little bit of rum in it. And so she said, wow, that was really good. That was sweet. And She goes, can I have another one? I don't know. I'm out hanging out with friends.
Yeah.
We're partying. And I'm drinking, but I don't think she would ever drink because she didn't drink. She was living for God, but I took her. It was a dance. It was at this big home when their parents were gone. And by the time I get back, I guess my friend Brian, he said she just really liked him. But the bar person or the adult serving minors was filling it more and more rum. By the time I get to where Jamie was with Brian, my best friend, she's laid out on the couch, out cold. What's the next thing happened, Buddha? This is for real. Boo! The party got busted. Sirens, cops.
We use that sound effect a lot here at the
Outcast. That's it. But, bro, the cops are busting my senior, junior class party. And me and my friend Brian take Jamie, arms and legs, running out the back door to what, a 4 foot, 5 foot chain link fence. We cannot find the gate. The cops are everywhere out front. We swing her. We go one, two, three, throw her over the fence. Well, she's drunk. I knew she would bounce. But she's out cold. We climb the fence. We get her. We parked over at the Burger King there in Roswell, New Mexico, in his little Mitsubishi truck. Long bed truck, canary yellow. We put her in between us, but the cops come around the back. They see us starting our lights. They do that sound. Woo! They shine their light. I roll down my window. She's out cold, like head slumped over. And the police officer said, were y'all just at that party? Well, I'm not a Christian. So I'm not a Christian. And I'm like, no, sir. And he goes, are y'all okay? Are y'all been drinking tonight? Well, I had been. Brian had been, and Jamie's wasted as a Christian. I hope people can hear this story and really hear my heart about it. And I said, no, sir, we're fine. Brian's going to drive. We're going to get her home. And he goes, all right. Right when he said, okay, she goes, blah, and she threw up all over me, all over the window and dash. That cop got out of the car, came to my car, and he said, you take her home to her father right now.
Ooh.
No joke, Buddha. We take her to, I call her dad. I'm scared to death.
I bet.
Does he know her father?
Jim says, he doesn't know she's drunk. Jim says, you get her home right now. We get to her house. And Jim, my wife just lost her dad a couple months ago. Jim comes to the door with me and Brian. We have mustaches. I have sideburns. I have a mullet, like for real, long mullet. Brian does too. He comes to the door with a .357 highway patrolman with Packmeyer grip, 6-inch barrel, pointing it in my face, shaking, his hand shaking. And he goes, get in here. And I'm like, oh my God. We go inside the house. He says, sit down. His mom takes Jamie back to the back. She's like, I'm going to be okay. You know, she's drunk. And he goes, what happened? I told him the story, pointed at Brian. I said, this one. He did it. And he goes, I don't care who did it, blah, blah, blah. And out from the back, I hear Jamie yell at her mom, Mommy, I love Scotty. Remember, I can't get in her pants. I can't get what I want.
What you wanted.
And I hear that. And she runs out from the back room. Her mom stops her. I can see her. I'm sitting on the couch soaking Brian. And she's like, I love you. And they take her back to the back. I'm thinking, oh, is that the alcohol talking? Or sometimes we say what we really feel.
Yeah.
So he goes, if my daughter likes you like that, you need to come to church all the time. And I did.
Shout out to Jim as well.
Wow.
God rest his soul. He's up in heaven. Good man from all accounts.
So I don't have a religious experience. You know, I have a real relational with people. Uh-huh. Who have a solid home, solid marriage. Jamie's dad died at 69 years of marriage to her mom. Her whole family stays married. My whole family, wrecked. Talk about generational curse like we talked about before. My siblings, all of them have been married twice. All of them have been divorced 2 and 3 times. All of them have been through all kinds of stuff that causes divorce. And I'm about to celebrate 40 years. And on the track of my grandparents and her parents.
Amen.
That's beautiful, man. I'm going to give you one more round of applause. I know earlier in the podcast, you had said that there was a moment that changed your life that we could talk about. Have we gone over that yet?
It was after going to a church and hearing the big guy.
Okay.
And I got saved that night when I heard the big preacher, the tall preacher.
After you had that dream. It might have been the waterbed situation.
It was the waterbed thing was okay. The life-changing. It was a vision.
Props for the balance on the waterbed, by the way.
That's not anybody, easy.
It was rough.
Who's ever tried that as a kid. Yeah.
I used to like pulling the covers back and slapping it like a stomach. I remember doing that all the time with the waterbed, man.
That was the moment. That was, you know.
Your aha.
That was the aha. That was the life changing. I had still a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
Still had a lot of renewing the mind to do. Romans 12, 1 and 2 says, I beseech you therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, brothers and sisters, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. Well, I really didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Holy and acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Verse 2, and be not conformed to this world. I was totally conformed to the world. And a lot of people listening, we live in the world. You know, we do stuff. We get attacked. We make wrong choices. We get hurt. We get wounded. A lot of people are medicating the pain with fentanyl now.
Oh, it's horrible.
The worst drug than ever. But even though we go through all of that, God can radically take a life, and he uses people in his plan. Like if I was God, I'd use a rock because rocks don't talk back. The Bible says rocks in the mountains cry out. It says the deer pant after God. Deers pant after God. Rocks cry out. Trees, you were talking about crying out. Rocks cry out that there is a God in the heavens, that there is a Savior. And trees lift their branches. But human beings, we're the only ones that talk back. Mm. We're the ones that don't want to lift up our hands to God and give our lives. We're the ones that don't pant after him like deers. And all of creation shouts that there is a God. But we're the ones that reject, but yet he's the answer. Like I said earlier, he's the one that can fix everyone listening. And you don't have to go to church to do it.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
You don't have to have a pastor to do it. It's good to have a pastor in case you face a disaster, no doubt.
Pastor for disaster.
That's right. That's it. But I'm excited because of what you're doing, what Ryan did on his episode. I'm excited to be here because I hope one day on another one we can talk about that other crazy story.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Because it's, I think maybe we should save it because my book's coming out.
Okay. Yeah, no, we definitely will.
And my book's, it's all in there. And okay. Adam's written some stuff in it too.
Okay.
And then the pictures of the actual stuff that I told you about from the hospitals.
Okay. Mm.
And the adoption centers are all actual and factual.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be awesome. Maybe even, I got a couple, Angelique and her husband, Justin. I think they go to your church too. Justin Bryson with all the tattoos and
Justin's a buddy of mine.
Justin and his wife Angelique.
Yes.
I'm going to have them in here next year for the Valentine's Day episode. But I would love in the future to have you and your wife in here for a Valentine's Day episode too, because I feel like for younger people, especially nowadays, man, divorce is like, they're like outfits. You just try different people on and take them off whenever you want.
Try it before you buy it.
Try it before you buy it. Yeah, go ahead. Do you think? We'll definitely get you in here again, brother. We're going to have you in here numerous times, Lord willing. So
that's awesome. I'm excited because I got to share it with you. And I always share that story. And people are listening. I go, what's the story? What's the story? It's about one of the kids that ended up being my kids. And, hopefully can come back and talk about it because that is a life-changing story. You heard it.
Yes, it is.
We talked about it before. And he's in our lives. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah, sure. No. Well, we're gonna stop it right here because I don't want to give too much away, man. I really, really don't. So I mean, it's super interesting to hear how you were introduced to faith and things and you know, going to seeing who you are now, Pastor. To where you were when you first initially had that, I can only imagine it must have been a struggle at first for you to change from where you were at, the way that you were living, to where you're at now. Was that a constant struggle for you, or did your life change pretty significantly after you decided to follow your faith?
There were thought patterns that I had to work on, but for me, I was if you're an addicted person or you have an addictive personality, you can swing the other way and be addicted.
Mm-hmm.
So like that song, I'm Addicted to Jesus, you know, came out of Hillsong. I'm dependent. I can't live without your love. I can't make it for a moment. It says, I'm addicted. I'm dependent. So I went from being dependent on other things to putting my total dependence, interdependent on the right things that Jesus said. So it was like, whom the Son sets free,
is free indeed.
That's what we believe. That's what we teach because it's here. So Jesus said, if you want to be free, you'll be free. So for me, it was a total switch, like night and day. But I still had these, you know, some stuff, getting married so young after that, you know, going off into the Marine Corps, becoming a better man. I want to be the husband that I saw my grandpa be. And I really love Jamie's dad, who's in heaven right now, Jim. Like my grand, he like became a dad.
Uh-huh.
And he just passed a few months ago. But I want to be like those dudes. I want to be like, it's funny, Jamie's dad's name is Jim, and my grandpa's name is Jones.
Wow.
Jones Atkins. So he liked to be called Jim. It's funny how God works that out, but
yeah,
it was, I got set free, bro. Like, boom.
Immediately.
Left the rehab that I was involved in, going into the meetings, dove headfirst into all this thing called being a believer.
Yeah.
Not just going to a church, but being a real sold out, fire breathing, devil stomping, world changing, radical kind of believer. Because I'm radical in other areas, and I'm going to give him who he gave his life for me, died on the cross. We all know the story. I'm going to give him my all, like I gave all that my all.
Yeah.
And so it was radical. It was instantaneous change. And the pastor noticed it, and he came up to Jamie and I, said, when I got out of the Marine Corps, he said, I want you to be my youth pastor. And I'm like, what? He's like, I know you served. I know you did this first season. I want you to be my youth pastor, and I think you should do some Bible college, but I think you can reach kids. I'm like, really? Gave me my reason to breathe air, you know,
wow.
To help kid, junior high through college, single. And we even work with single again people, Jamie and I did. And I was walking in my purpose. It wasn't the Marine Corps. It wasn't the jock and the sports like I did all through junior high and high school. It was no longer women. I had one.
Amen.
And it's beautiful.
Man.
And we need to reach a generation, bro, before they're rescued, need to be rescued. And we need to rescue them too.
Yeah.
Because this world's crazy right now, and we need to reach this generation. And I'm thankful that you are doing that, what you're doing.
Man, I'm thankful that you're here. I was just reading an article about Kensington, where all the fentanyl epidemic is, and how they are now making it illegal to have those facilities where the addicts are monitored by doctors and stuff to make sure that they don't overdose and things.
Making it legal or illegal?
Illegal.
Mm.
So there's going to be a lot more people. Like, we went over the statistics, 109,000 or 100, and I forget.
118,000.
Yeah, in 1 year. It wasn't even, you know, this is like before COVID and right after.
Yeah,
it's going to get even worse. And I mean, and this is, it's so scary to think, you know, like, you have these convictions and you have these incredible situations in your life where God was able to speak to you and you were able to listen, same as you, Ryan, you know, but to think that a substance is so powerful now that your six-year-old daughter can go to school and a little kid gives her a pill and
yep.
It's game over. It's a dichotomy in the way that you're talking and how the world is, and it's just living right now, just in the reality of what we're doing and how this conversation that we're having, it's just, it's a blessing to be able to have you guys here and to hear these stories, man. Thank you. Thank you for opening up about that. And
honored to be here.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm like mid thought right now. Just everything, you know,
real quick, anybody listening, know that this is not a game anymore. It's no longer fun. It's life and death for each one of us.
Yeah.
I was an extreme fentanyl user. I used a lot. More than any human should ever use. I was using over 100 pills a day. When quitting, one pill overdosed me. One pill. It is no longer just a game out there. And I truly pray y'all feel those convictions and you hear the Lord talking to you, telling you that you are worthy. You're better than this. You are more than this. You were created to be more than what you're doing, mm-hmm. because yeah. it is truly, truly life and death out there. I've buried my two best friends because of it. So it's no longer fun.
Absolutely, man. No, thank you for speaking on that. And Pastor, you've been married for 40 some years now from that situation. 40 some years.
40 this October.
It'll be 15. 40 years this October. What would you say for anybody out there who's in a similar situation? Like, what are one of the secrets of having a long-lasting faith, you know, driven relationship? What is the glue that holds you and your wife together?
Oh, for marriage?
For marriage, yeah.
Marriage works if you work your marriage.
Mm.
Okay.
We live that. People, they give up. They, like we said earlier, they want to try it before they buy it or live together for a while. And we know mm-hmm. we live in the world. I'm not downing nobody. I'm just saying once you do find that right person, even this book that we were talking about earlier, the Bible's very clear about marriage, and marriage works, like the institution of marriage works. Mm-hmm. Like our government had nothing to do with marriage. Mm-mm. They weren't around when God made it. Another kingdom had nothing to do with marriage. Wasn't the Roman Empire didn't decide it, or Spartans.
Yeah.
And I love those movies. It was God created male and female, created he them. And I'm not preaching to nobody. I'm just saying God, it was his idea.
Yeah.
It wasn't ours, but we try to make marriage our idea. And if we follow the true idea of covenant marriage, I would tell people, work your marriage. You know, we tell them all the time, because marriage works. Don't use the D word. Don't manipulate. Don't throw out divorce. Don't leave the house. Don't walk away. Don't have to slam the door and go out. I would never leave. I just stayed there because of abandonment. She never had a dad like that. You know, one time, because you asked this, I got to tell you this quick story. One time we were married for 5 years. 5 or 6 years, and I was so mad at Jamie. I called her dad. He knows this story. I said, Jim, your daughter, you got to do something about her. And he's all, what? And I said, you have to do something. We're not going to use the D word. I'm not leaving. But I said, you have to do something about your daughter. And he goes, Scotty, listen to me. Hey, Scotty, he got my attention on the phone. And he goes, are you listening? I said, yes, sir. He goes, do you trust me? I said, yes, sir. He goes, am I like a dad? I said, yes, sir. He goes, when I gave you my daughter, she was 16 years old, and I made her who she was. Your wife right now is a byproduct of you.
Mm.
I was like, thanks, Pop. Click. Went back and worked my marriage and said, this is what your dad said. She cried. I said, I'm sorry. This is a byproduct of me. Let's work our marriage. And we never go to bed angry.
I like that. That's good.
And that's biblical too. Don't ever go to sleep, the word of God says, angry at each other. So we might be in upstairs and downstairs. I'm just being honest. We might not be talking, and we might be tired, but one of us is gonna come to the other because we're not gonna go to bed angry.
That's good.
That's such good advice.
I mean, it's incredible to hear, and thank you for that marriage advice. You know, I think just nowadays the world is so set up to just throw things away, and
right.
instead of really, you know, making things work. And, you know, my wife and I, we've had our marriage rebuilt from the ground up. God is good all the time, you know. You guys have gone through 40 years of marriage. You guys have created a lot of amazing things together. Let's talk about this church, man. Where is this church? What is the church called? Where is it located?
Yeah, it's called CGC Buddha. It's called Covenant Generations Church.
Covenant Generations.
Some people think that we're saying convent because it's CGC, and we're like, no, it's not a convent.
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay.
It's Covenant Generations Church, which covenant means agreement.
Okay.
So we try to walk in agreement with people. Amos 3:3 says, how can two of us, like me and you, or me, you, and Ryan, walk together unless they be in agreement? And we're not always going to agree about everything,
yeah.
but try our best to live peaceably among all men. So we came 20 years ago, this past January,
yep.
on the 12th, it's 20 years old. and we started with a bunch of youth and college age. 12 people moved from Dallas, and we planted a church. Mm. And we started at the Viscount Suites on Broadway. Mm. Fridays was there across from the street. Now it's the Guadalajara.
Guadalajara Grill.
And we were in the restaurant area that had closed down. And then we moved to the ballrooms. And okay. It just kept growing. And we launched the church.
Wow.
Started in our living room, actually, then moved to the Viscount Suites on Broadway. Wow. And then it's just continued to...
And now you guys have a full building and everything like that?
Yeah, we've been, you know, we were in Amphi School District's Performing Arts Center for a while. Then we shared in some storefronts and a warehouse. And then we ended up on Tucson Boulevard. You might remember that story in 2016 when Winter Haven mm-hmm. and our roof blew off on, and it blew off on everybody's garages and house. The church lost its roof. It lost everything on Tucson Boulevard and Grant right in there. And the insurance came, fixed everything.
Wow.
Mate brought it up to beautiful, and we sold that building to another church. And then we went over to 651 South Kolb over here, not too far. And it was an older congregation that the people were literally dying. Mm-hmm. And it had been in the community for 61 years, 62 years. And those older people wanted a younger church that were reaching people and military and soul winning, getting people in. And we took the proceeds from that church that the roof blew off, and we went over there and we purchased this building 3.5 years ago,
yeah,
almost four. And we remodeled it, fixed it up.
Wow.
And it's an amazing story.
All glory to God.
It's right next to Booth Thicket.
Oh, okay.
Between Broadway and 22nd.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. And what days do you guys have service?
We do a once a month Wednesday night big service patio party outside. And when we do lunch trucks and food, it's always free.
Always free.
Always.
Mm.
They can come right up off the streets, and it's always free. All the drinks, we never charge for nothing. We don't charge for funerals. We don't charge for weddings. We don't charge... I don't get charging for the gospel. I don't see that in the Bible.
Yeah.
And Jesus turned tables when people were doing it.
Yeah.
That story in the temple when he turned tables. So I don't want him to turn my tables.
Nope.
So we bless everybody. Like my saxophone friend, Neiman Lyles, if you want to check him out, he's a African-American brother. He's on the smooth jazz stuff. He's amazing. He plays sax for us. Our music is very edgy, very progressive, yep. Very... Like, people go, here's what everyone says. There's no way I had that much freaking fun at church today.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And we want it to be not your normal experience. Our first billboards and stuff that we did and flyers when we moved here said, church for people who don't like church.
Yep.
I like it.
We're about to do billboards again that say church for people who don't like church.
That's cool. That's awesome. And I mean, I think it's awesome. You know, I've heard about the church over the years, different people that have gotten into recovery. Ryan, Mom. I think you know my wife's cousin, Brad Sibley.
Oh, yeah. He's a minister. He just married a gal that was in our church.
Yeah.
So,
friends with him.
You know, so I just think it's so cool how, you know, things just kind of come together like that, man. So it's been an absolute pleasure having you, and hopes that whoever's listening, man, if you guys are looking for a home, you guys are looking for that community, you want to be involved in something greater than yourself and learn to have that amazing relationship, you know where to go now. One more time with that address, brother. What's that?
651 South Kolb Street. It's between Broadway and 22nd. On the east side of the road, right next to Booth Thicket.
All right, and that's Covenant Generations Church. That's what's up. Yes,
sir. Come one, come all, please. We don't judge. We take you as you are. We just want to see you guys, you know, come to the house.
Oh, and we have a gymnasium. We have basketball. I mean, we went up from a small building to a very... We had, like, 3 kids' classrooms. Now we have, like, 20.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, man. We had 399 seats. Now we have a capacity of 1,100.
Wow.
We're not there yet, but Easter and Christmas, you know, when people come out. But we're growing. And come hang out. Come check out Generations Church.
That's fantastic. Oh,
can I give them the website?
Yeah, go ahead. We'll put it in the show notes of the episode, too.
You can. My new website is up, scottygourlay.com. Scotty, S-C-O-T-T-Y, like beam me up, Scotty, on Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Scotty Gourlay, G-U-R-U-L-E.com. And I do these things called Thriving Thursdays, my podcast, which you can go to thrivingthursdays.com, or the church website is Covenant, spelled like marriage, Covenant, Covenant, generations with an S, .org, and it's got everything about the all youth, right, the kids, everything.
That's cool. Yeah, we'll definitely throw all of those links there on the show notes. Everyone who's interested can go check those out. You know, I'm just extremely grateful, extremely breast. All that porn talk, huh? I am extremely grateful, and I am extremely blessed to have you guys in the studio. Ryan, thank you so much for helping me co-host with this one. And Pastor Scotty, give him a huge round of applause one more time for coming down to the R-Cast. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed that episode. You know, make sure to check out those show notes, and please share this with a friend or a loved one, someone that may be in recovery, someone that needs to hear this today. We hope you all have an amazing rest of your week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Much love. God bless. Peace. What's going on, everybody? This is Buddha from the R-Cast, and I just wanted to thank you for checking out this week's episode. It means a lot, and if you could share it with a friend or a loved one, somebody in need in recovery, or maybe somebody who just needs that little bit of extra positivity in their life, we'd greatly appreciate it. If you would like to join us here on the R-Cast, either in the studio live or online, hit us up. The links are down in the show notes of this episode, and on there, you can find direct links to our main website here at America's Rehab Campus and all of our social media platforms. Follow us. We keep the posts positive and motivational, focused on recovery, health, and wellness. As you know, in this modern day and age, we need as much love as possible, y'all. And as always, if you or somebody you know is in need of substance abuse treatment, please don't hesitate to give us a call. We're open 24 hours a day, and our direct phone number is 1-833-272-7342. Once again, that phone number is 1-833-272-7342. I hope you all have a beautiful rest of your day. Much love, and God bless. Peace.